Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm back. Did you miss me? Something crazy happened. I signed off like the show was over just a couple of minutes ago. Of course, we have another hour to go. But what's weird is that many, many times the show is over and I think there's still another hour yet to go, but it's gone by so fast. The reverse happened just now, which is why if you thought, why is he saying goodbye? He's got a whole other hour to go. It was just that. Caught in a time warp. What can I say? 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. How about Gregory now in Fort Myers, Florida? Good morning, Gregory.
Yes, hello. I have a question about on this abortion debate. You try to be respectful. You try to be, you try to win souls and kind of take a measured approach. But we were having this debate, and I wanted to say, and I didn't know how it would be taken, but I wanted to say, would you commit an abortion personally if you could, or volunteer in a clinic, or take, a child's life in the womb? If you could actively participate in that act, would you? And if the person says yes, then I would say, okay, fine. If the person says no, then I would say, well, then why do you support it? If you wouldn't do it yourself, why would you support it? Mm-hmm. And I hedged saying that because I thought it may look like, I was looking for an argument or whatever. But is that a fair argument in your opinion?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I might frame it slightly differently. So let's role play here, Gregory. So you're the pro-abortion person, right? And I'd say, so do you support abortion? I mean, would you yourself, if you were a woman, would you yourself have an abortion? So I'm asking you that question. You're pretending to be the abortion.
I would say, if I was a woman, I would say no. But I mean, if I was the pro side, I guess I would say yes.
No, let's role play. So you are the pro-abortion. You're in favor of abortion. And I'm asking you, if you were a woman, would you personally have an abortion?
No, yes, I would.
Okay, I thought you were going to be the person who said that I wouldn't do it.
Oh, but... I would never think of it. No.
Okay, why not?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Right.
So let's take it from the top because this is important to kind of see what we're doing here. So we're role playing. I'm asking you, and you are, for the purposes of the role play, you are in favor of abortion, and I'm asking you, if you were a woman, would you personally have an abortion?
No, I would never have one, but I want someone else's rights to be preserved to make that choice.
Right, we're not talking about them, we're talking about you. So if you were a woman, you're saying you would not have an abortion, right?
I would not, right.
Okay, why not?
Because it kills life, ends life, terminates life.
I agree. So if you wouldn't do it, now are you saying you wouldn't do it because it would be wrong to do that?
Yes, because it's murder, and that murder is wrong.
So if you wouldn't do it because it's wrong, then why would you say to somebody else that she can do it if it's wrong?
Right.
So you see what I'm doing here?
Right.
Let me just try to explain what I'm doing here, Gregory. I'm taking your very good instinct, and you said, is that a valid argument? It is a very good way to do it. What I'm suggesting to you is that if you ask these kinds of questions, you will begin to break down the person's illogic and the inconsistencies, the fallacies and things in their own arguments will come to the surface. That's what this method is intended to do. So it's a very good thing that you're proposing, and I would encourage you to do it. And the more you do it, the better at it you'll get, and the more easily, it's like cracking a walnut. the more easily you can crack it, and then you can get to the heart of the matter, which is the person seeing, even if they don't admit it to you, that the thing itself is wrong. Doesn't matter who's doing it. It's still wrong. If it's wrong, if it's killing somebody, if it's ending an innocent human life, doesn't matter who's doing it, it's still wrong. In which case, then you're really leading them up to the point of, well, if I oppose it because it's wrong, why am I afraid to say so? Why am I afraid to take a stand and oppose it regardless of who's doing the killing?
I think both images are jarring, the way you explained it, but actually taking tools and instruments, you know, to you know what I'm trying to say? So it's both sides of the same coin. Yes, they both go down the same road, but I really wanted to say this to this person because, you know, they're very, you know, animal loving and no furs. And I just say to myself, you would oppose killing a mink, you know, but not a, but not a child. It just goes in opposite ways. But, you know, you try not to be inflammatory. You know, you try to, you know, don't look like you're looking for a fight, but yet you, like you say, you get those wheels turning. And I just, I think I will do that. Thank you for your advice.
Oh, you're most welcome, Gregory. And it's this, the nice thing is that this is a technique that anyone can master. And once you've mastered it, then it becomes very easy to help people at least see, even if they won't admit it, they can at least see the flaw in their argument. It's called the Socratic method because Socrates, long ago, he had a reputation for teaching, educating his students by asking them questions and dialoguing with them. So the Socratic dialogues are very famous in philosophy, and he would help them arrive at the truth by interrogating them on these issues, and little by little, their error would become visible to them, and they could move away from the error. So that's what this exercise is intended to do, and anyone can do it, which is really what's nice about this, is that once you learn how to do it, then you can apply it to all kinds of different problems, abortion being one of them. Well, thank you, Gregory. Very nice to talk to you. Let's go to Jane now in California. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Patrick. A couple of things. Mm-hmm. I recently turned 80 years old and was greeted by telephone by an old friend of mine of about 60 years who lives on the opposite coast. Mm-hmm. And we exchanged greetings, and one of the questions during our conversation she posed to me was what was my feeling about the Supreme Court decision on Roe. Mm-hmm. And I told her, and she just was crestfallen. Oh, how awful. I knew, she's Catholic, I am not, I'm a Christian Protestant, okay. But she's been a very faithful Catholic all the years I have known her, except mm-hmm. for I have known that she has been in favor of abortion, of mm-hmm. life, of abortion, yes. So our conversation escalated, Patrick, to the point where we were virtually screaming at each other over the telephone. Mm-hmm. I, several years ago, saw the documentary that was produced by the woman who had worked for Planned Parenthood, and mm-hmm. it was extremely impactful mm-hmm. on me, and I've never forgotten it, and I brought that up to her in our violent argument, and she said, "You don't know what you're talking about." And I said, "I think I do." And she said, "My husband was on the board of Planned Parenthood. Not only that, Jane, but his mother was on the board of Planned Parenthood." And I said, "Mary,
it's not something to be proud of, that's for sure.
Planned Parenthood is a big business. It's just a big business. And I don't know the exact number, but I think I have heard that there have been over 400,000 abortions. Now, I don't know if all of those were performed at Planned Parenthood, but anyhow, I ended up hanging up on her. and it's most unsettling. This is just, I don't know where to go with this. I am as passionately in favor of life, I think, as she is mm-hmm. on the other side, and I don't know where to go with this.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to be calm about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where to get more information, say, on the statistics of Planned Parenthood. I mean, I'm spouting off without really having anything substantial to back up what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I can just share with you some resources, number one, that will help. I would
okay,
go
good.
To liveaction.org, and they have not only outreach as far as helping people change their minds about abortion, change their hearts about abortion, but also they've got ample statistics and resources that can give you, you know, the numbers that you're looking for. And the number, by the way, is well into the tens of millions of unborn babies that have been aborted just in this country alone since 1973. I'm looking at a chart here from Pew Research, and in 1973, there were 250,000 abortions. By 1980, that had jumped to 1.4 million abortions that year. It seems to have peaked just shy, right around 1990, at about 1.6 million abortions just that year. And by the year 2020, the number had declined to about 930,000. Now, there are two graphs here. One is from the CDC, the Centers for Disease and Control, and the other is from the Guttmacher Institute, which formerly was a division, a wholly owned division of Planned Parenthood. It got spun off into its own autonomy, but it's still closely affiliated with Planned Parenthood. And as of 2020, they reckon that there were 930,160 abortions in the U.S. So if you add these up over that nearly 50-year period from 1973 forward, you can see that the number of abortions, its numbers well into the tens of millions. And there are some differences of opinion. Is it 40 million? Is it, you know, 35 million? Is it 50 million? So that's where you'll have to look more closely at the numbers. But the fact is, it's millions and many millions of children who are aborted. So the live action is a place that you can get a lot of this information from. But more importantly, as to your own, you were scandalized, I'm sorry to say, by a bad Catholic who purports to be a Catholic and yet supports the work of the devil, the destruction of innocent human life. And I'm sorry that you were scandalized. And I'm sorry that she was such a bad witness for the Catholic faith. What a shame. But I think that the violence that you experienced is born out of this ideology. The ideology itself is violence, to use violence to get what you want. And if you want a career, or you want to keep your bikini figure, or if you want any of the things that people want, I mean, if a woman is willing to use violence to get what she wants, then it makes sense to me that that kind of recourse to violence, even just verbal violence, is probably not far away. So in just hearing what you're saying, Jane, and hearing the hurt in your voice and the disappointment in your voice, I never want to write somebody off, and I never would seek a situation where you just have to close the door on a friendship. But sometimes it's necessary, and this might be one of those times. In other words, if she's that kind of a person, that she could countenance the wanton destruction of an innocent human life, I don't think I could be friends with somebody like that, personally. I don't know what you would build a friendship mm-hmm. on. What do you build it on at that point?
No, you're absolutely right. And not only that, Patrick, but I'm, you know, and looking back and hearing various things that she has said, I'm thinking our values may well be very, very divided, very separate. I just have to say that. I just think our values, not just on this particular issue, but on mm-hmm. many issues are.
Yeah, it's like you've lifted up a rock, and you can't quite believe your eyes what you see scurrying around under that rock. You never knew that
yes.
was there,
yes.
and what else is in there?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, exactly.
Well, I'm so truly sorry. I'm truly sorry, Jane, that you're going through this.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate your input, and I will go to liveaction.com. Were these abortions in the millions, many of them performed at Planned Parenthood?
Yes, many of them. And if you want the precise
she
statistics.
Also said,
mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yes. She also was emphatic about the idea of Planned Parenthood are basically an organization that, how did she put it, advises young women on not having children. And mm-hmm. I just said, oh, that is just such rubbish. You know, mm-hmm. it's just such rubbish. Mm-hmm. They are known for their abortions. They're not known for
I know what you mean. You know how you can prove that? There are plenty of in live act. It's actually liveaction.org, by the way. But they have videos that are available on YouTube as well of people calling abortion clinics. So they'll have a woman calling maybe 20, 30 abortion clinics throughout a state, or even in some cases throughout different states, and just call them up. Hey, I just, you know, do you do prenatal care? Do you do women's, you know, OBGYN health care? Yeah, we do. I'd like to come in for an ultrasound. Can I make an appointment? Oh, we don't do those here. Well, that's part of like prenatal health care. Yeah, but we don't do those here. But I just want to come in and get an ultrasound. Do you have an ultrasound machine? Yeah, but we only use that if you're going to have an abortion. So even the Planned Parenthood people themselves, when they don't realize that they are being recorded, they're very honest about, you know, they're not this women's healthcare clinic that's a full service clinic. They'll tell you they are, and they will insist on it, and they'll get angry and stomp their feet if you point this out. But when you get to the evidence, you see that they really aren't. It's all about abortion. That's their business model. That's what they do. That's how they make their money. That's why the federal government yeah. gives them $500 million a year of taxpayer money. It's a big business. Mm-hmm. Now, I have to leave it this, Jane, because I've got to take a break, but I don't know anything okay. at all about this friend of yours, but I'm going to ask you to do one thing, and that's to really pray for her. And if it's possible for there not to be a door closing in this relationship, I think it would be, if it's possible for you to remain in her life in some way for this reason, it's entirely possible that she had at least one abortion. And her fury and her agitation may be coming from her own being wounded by an abortion. And as human beings, mm-hmm. we're very good at justifying and rationalizing our actions. And it may well be that because she's never healed from the abortion or abortions that she had, that she's taken this up as almost a religious cause to defend something that deep down she knows is wrong. Now, I'm not saying she's had an abortion, but it's possible that she had an abortion. And she would really need somebody like you who's going to speak the truth in love and pray for her, if nothing else. So I hope the door doesn't close on the relationship, and maybe you can be the person that Jesus will use to help her find that healing, if that's indeed what happened. Another possibility, maybe she didn't have an abortion, but maybe she told her daughter to have an abortion. That's another very common thing. And if mm-hmm. you're carrying that luggage around and the pain of knowing that you coerced or encouraged your daughter to have an abortion, even if you didn't have it, it's still a deep wound. And I could see why maybe she's so agitated, if that's what happened.
Mm-hmm. You've been a very great help and a comfort, and I thank you.
You're
very,
welcome,
very
Jane.
Much.
Thank you. Thank you. And God bless you. Keep listening. I hope you will. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
If you've been wondering where Cyrus is, he's taking a week off. In fact, he had a 20th wedding anniversary just a couple days ago, and he and his lovely wife have been celebrating that. And, value added, Cyrus posted a picture of them as newlyweds. So if you go to the show Twitter feed, at P. Madrid Show, or go to Cyrus's, but it's just a long string of numbers. But you'll see where he posted a picture of himself and his lovely wife when they got married, July the 6th, 2002. So you know what? I'm going to retweet that right now so you can find it on my Twitter feed, at Patrick Madrid. But that's why Cyrus is gone. He's fine. Everything's good. He'll be back. And he's just enjoying some vacation time. Back to the phones. Let's go to Daniel in Ontario, California. Hi, Daniel.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is regarding daily mass. I would like to start attending daily mass, you know, regularly. Mm-hmm. But due to my work schedule, oftentimes the mass that is available to me is offered in Spanish. Okay. And while I can follow along and recite the prayers, you know, at the appropriate times, I don't fully understand, you know, right, all that is said. Mm-hmm. So my question is that a sufficient act of devotion, and or should I be making a greater effort to find a mass that I can fully participate in?
No, it's great. I mean, the mass is the mass is the mass. So regardless of the language it's celebrated in, if you are there at mass in Spanish, even if you don't fully understand it, it's still spiritually fruitful and beneficial to you. And who knows, you might pick up some extra Spanish along the way. That's not a bad thing. Now, are you familiar with San Secondo de Asti Parish, which is literally right next to the Ontario airport? Are you aware of its existence?
Yes, sir, I am. I have a few of my brother knights have been trying to get me to attend.
Okay. The only reason I mention it is because that's a parish that I don't know where in Ontario your office is, but if you're anywhere near there, I mean, they have masses throughout the day, and I'm just pulling up their website here, and they've got, so weekday masses, 6:30 a.m., 8 a.m., 7 p.m. They do offer the traditional Latin mass also on Saturdays and Sundays, and all the schedule of masses is there on their website. So it's ssdachurch.org, ssdachurch.org. So that's another opportunity, and those masses would be in English if you're interested.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. And to answer your question one more time, no, there's nothing wrong whatsoever with going to mass in a different language. If that's what you can do, it's great that you're doing it. I appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you. How about Jonathan now in Philadelphia? Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I just had a little comment and a question for you. The comment is in regards to Jerry, who just called about the Nancy Pelosi scandal at the Vatican. I just heard Cale Clark share an amazing story about a young man who decided to leave the Catholic Church because of all the scandal and the hypocrisy and all the seemingly contradicting things that are happening. And then he shared a quick story about John Henry Newman's first trip to Rome. Mm-hmm. And all the same things were going on when John Henry Newman was there. And it was a mess. And he said, it must be divine. Yep. He's talking about the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. Because it was such a mess. How could this thing last for so long if it wasn't from God? And it's unfortunate that the young man came to the opposite conclusion of St. John Henry Newman. And then my question for you, sir, I'm a newly sober person, 5 years of sobriety.
Congratulations.
Just celebrated a few days ago. Thank you, sir. And as the fog lifts, you know, from years of substance abuse, new memories come back of sins and how I may have hurt other people in my life. Mm-hmm. And some of them I know darn well that I have not confessed. Some of them I'm pretty sure I might have confessed, but I'm not sure. And so my question is, do I need to revisit some of these in the confessional?
Yeah, the short answer is yes, and that's based on the fact that if you are certain that you'd never confessed a particular mortal sin that you forgot, then you're obliged to confess it when you remember it. So whenever the next time is you go to confession. So a few pointers on that. When you go to confession next time, Jonathan, you give some background to the priest. You know, I was involved in substance abuse, so alcohol, drugs, whatever it may have been. Just kind of bring that up and say, for a period of time, I was in a fog, and not only was I doing things that I realize now were seriously sinful, but I didn't really remember them until the fog lifted. So now I'm remembering some things that I never confess. I want to confess them now. He'll understand. For the things that you're not sure about, and you look back and you say, well, I remember being aware that that was a sin 20 years ago, but I don't remember if I ever actually confessed it. Well, then it's a good idea to confess it. That way there's no doubt. And you know that you've left it at the foot of the cross. You've left it for Jesus. And you can move forward without ever having any lingering concerns about that. And then the last little bit of advice I'd say, Jonathan, because all of us can and do, I'm sure, forget sins that we commit. At the end of your confession, and this is something I learned from when I was a kid, but it really came in handy as I got older, is to say what I would suggest saying at the end of your confession is, after you've gone through the number and kind of all the sins that you remember, mortal sins that is, then just say, and for these and all the sins of my past life, I am truly sorry. And that would encompass everything. That would be your statement of your contrition, your firm purpose of amendment. You're sorry for what you've done. And even though you don't remember everything, you acknowledge that whatever those sins may have been, that you are truly sorry for them. And then if one of them surfaces down the road, maybe a month from now, you say, oh yeah, that other thing, I forgot. Just bring it to confession. And it won't take long, I don't think, before you'll have a clean slate and you're not going to have to worry about anything, because pretty much everything that you're going to remember, you will have remembered.
What All right, you thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. I can do it.
Do you have the relevant radio app on your phone?
I do, yes.
Okay, well, if you look in the upper right-hand corner where it says pray, you'll see a section on, it's called Confession Helper. And there are a lot of things in there about how to prepare for confession, how to make a good examination of conscience, prayers, and things like that. So that's free for the taking if you want to use that as you prepare for the next confession.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
You're welcome. Yeah, thank you. Good to talk to you. Let's go to David now in Phoenix. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a little background. I'm a practicing physician. I'm not an obstetrician or gynecologist, and okay. I'm a former Catholic.
Okay.
And I just want to bring some perspective to this abortion debate. I have a close friend, late 30s. They had two kids. They wanted to have a third kid, and they're both over 35, so the pregnancy's high risk.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm a little nervous.
That's okay. It's just you and me and a few million people listening. That's all. No pressure.
That's okay. I'm sure I'll be fine. So they didn't do any prenatal genetic testing, any prenatal screening. And when the child was born, it had a condition called Prader-Willi syndrome. Mm-hmm. Now, this is characterized by severe mental retardation and uncontrolled eating.
Okay.
So when the child got older, the child became violent. And by like 5 or 6, the child was about 250 pounds and was a physical threat to their other two children.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine this put strain on the marriage, and eventually they just couldn't deal with it, because the forces to protect your children when one is pit against two is just, I don't know how anyone can deal with that situation. And, you know, we see this all the time where these, where you have these children who have severe developmental abnormalities that are incompatible with life. And there has to be room in this country for people who don't believe the same things you do. Mm-hmm. For these situations, we need to have a sensible whole life look at this problem. I understand the Catholic position on abortion, but it's just, it's not compatible with common sense in these instances. You can't have a country where, you know, a minority of people are dictating to the rest of the country. It does not work that way. And
Are you saying that majority rules, that's how you determine what's right and wrong on the basis of how many people numerically believe it's right or wrong?
No, I think this is the problem. This is a difficult and uncomfortable situation where there's no definite. I mean, really? You could say life begins in conception. It probably does. But
Do you think it's okay to take an innocent person's life under any circumstances?
I don't think there's a culture of life in this country to begin with.
Well, but just all things being equal, in the abstract, would you say you are for or against the idea that we can take an innocent person's life?
I think that's up to the individual person.
What if it's up to me and I decide to take your life?
Well, Patrick, I'm a fully formed and completely developed human being. I'm not an embryo or a fetus.
So what? You were a human being before you were born. A minute before you passed through your mother's birth canal, you were as human as you are now. You look different then because that's what humans look like at that stage of development. I mean, as you well know as a physician. You didn't magically become a human being when you popped out of your mom. So I'm just asking
you. I know,
but
there's a certain.
I mean, if that's a human life, certainly an innocent human life, wouldn't you say?
Well,
And if that's not a human life, David, then why are we harvesting its organs?
Why are we what? I'm sorry, you broke up.
If that's not a human life, the fetus. If that's not a human life, then why are we harvesting its organs?
Why are we harvesting its organs?
Yeah, like Planned Parenthood does and makes money hand over fist. Harvesting the aborted fetal stem cells, harvesting aborted babies, or during the abortion, I suppose, even, parts of their bodies. I mean, to say that it's not a human being is simply begging the question, because then you'd have to say what it is. If it's not a human being, what is it?
I'll agree with you that it's a human being, but you know, it has no autonomy. It's completely dependent on another host for its existence.
Right. Just like the
woman
baby,
in that situation.
Just
has,
like the baby a week old. Well, when you were a week old, you had no autonomy. You were completely dependent upon your mother for your existence.
You can hand that baby to someone else at a week old.
You're begging the question, David. It's still a human being, as you and I both agree. This is an innocent person who hasn't done anything wrong, and the viability argument doesn't work. Yeah, the viability argument doesn't really work because for at least a year or more, that child is still unviable without somebody helping the baby.
Yeah, but you can hand that off to another person. It's not the same as a fetus. Let me ask you this.
Well, how do you figure that? I mean, if it's a fetus, it could be delivered by C-section. Could be handed to an adoptive parent. I mean, of course it can be handed to another person. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
But there's a difference between an embryo and a fully formed human being.
That's true.
It's not the same.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, if there was a fire in a hospital and you had to save a five-year-old or a container of 50 frozen embryos, I think everyone would say we'd save the five-year-old.
I'm familiar with that dilemma, but it doesn't change the fact that we're dealing with this question. If that's a human life, that's an innocent person. So it goes back to my question: Are you saying then that you are okay with killing innocent people under some circumstances? And if so, what are those circumstances?
No,
and who decides?
The person has to. You're conflating a very specific situation, pregnancy, with the general act of murder, and they're not the same.
Why not?
Because an embryo is not the same as a fully formed, autonomous human being.
Sure, that's true, but it doesn't mean that he's any less human. Doesn't mean that he's any less innocent. No, it doesn't.
She is considerably less human because she is a morula. She is a blastocyst. It's not the same as a fully...
David, you're a physician. I mean, I'm not a physician, and even I know that that's what human beings look like at that stage of development. I mean,
that's
medical...
That's what chickens look like at that stage of development.
But nonetheless, it's a chicken. And the point is that we all started off as a single cell entity. And over the course of development, as you know, it's going to look different. So the appearance of the thing doesn't change the fact that it is a human being. When you're a very old man, you look different from the way you looked when you were a newborn. It doesn't change the fact that you're still a human being.
It's a human being, but I mean, genetically, it's a human being, but it does not have the capacity to recognize pain. It does not have the capacity to taste. It does not have the capacity to see.
So what?
And the
so what? A person in a coma in a hospital room also does not have those same things. Are you saying that because a person may, in a given situation, not be able to be sensitive to pain or whatever, that we should then kill that person if we want to?
I have seen many people in comas, and it is a mercy to let these people go, as opposed to keeping them alive on life support.
Well, that's different from killing them. I agree with you if you're saying that I'm
plugging somebody from withdrawing support, you're killing them.
Well, it results in the person dying a natural death if you're talking about something like, say, a ventilator. But are you proposing...
That's a semantic argument.
No, it's not. Because there's a difference between removing extraordinary means of supporting somebody and, let's say, killing the person directly. Two different things.
Listen, if you have a brainstem injury and you can't breathe on your own and you withdraw a ventilator, that person's going to die.
Right. Right.
It's and just that, the same as putting a bullet in their head.
No, it's not.
The thing you're doing is causing that person's demise.
No, your confusion, David, is that you're looking at the outcome and saying that because the outcomes are the same, therefore the motivations are indifferent to one another, and they're not. You can have the same outcome, and on the one hand, you can be guilty of a crime. If you smother that patient in the bed, that is different from unplugging a ventilator, even though the outcome is the same. You haven't
it's
done
the
anything
same
immoral.
Thing. It is the same thing.
No, it's not. Oh, so as a physician, are you saying that you would be okay with smothering a patient or putting a bullet in his head, to use your terminology? If it's the same thing.
No, but to think it's not the same thing. The end result is exactly the same. I don't want to shoot anyone. I don't want to smother anyone. But the result of what you're doing is the same. It's less grisly. It's less violent. It's the same result.
But see, we're arguing past each other, David. No, I'm not saying it's not the same outcome. Of course it's the same outcome. Somebody dies. But the way the person dies means all the difference in the world. And
to whom? The person?
Well, sure. I mean, if somebody was going to murder you versus allow you to die a natural death, don't you think there's a difference to you?
Patrick,
there's certainly a difference to the person who does it, because he may very well go to jail
if I'm in a coma, mm-hmm. and someone withdraws my life support or someone shoots me in the head, I don't know. It's the same result.
Irrelevant. You know why it's irrelevant? Because it's a moral act in the case of murdering somebody.
This is a classic situation where I'm trying to speak on something very specific and you're generalizing to murder in society.
No, David, you're the one who brought up the issue of putting a bullet through somebody's head. You brought that up. And you're saying that there's no difference between... You see, here's where the problem is, I think. that we both agree that the outcome is the same, but the means to that outcome is different. And you're advocating...
Listen, I don't...
Go ahead, Dave. I've got to take a break, but I'll let you finish things up. Go ahead.
I don't want to argue semantics with you. All I'm saying is that there has to be room in this country for a variety of opinions. And a little bit of love and a little bit of understanding is probably what we need more than anything.
What about the love for the unborn children?
What about the love for the poor mother that can't support another child?
Let's help both.
That would be great, but there's not that sort of culture of life in this country or in this world.
There could be if there were people who, like you, converted their hearts and wound up making a place for unborn children instead of saying that we can kill them.
I'm not saying, I'm just saying there has to be a place for people who don't believe the same things.
Well, yeah, okay. I don't think we would say there has to be a place for people who feel differently than we do about armed robbery. Because not everybody agrees with you and me that we shouldn't have armed robbery. Shouldn't we have a little love and just make a place for them so that when they want to do armed robbery, it's okay for them, even though we might disagree with it? I've got to take a break, though, David. I am glad you called. I hope you'll call me again. I appreciate our conversation. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
I'm here for you, and we've got some time left to go, 888-914-9149. And if we don't make it today, don't worry, we'll do it again tomorrow. Let's go to Allison in Nevada. Hi, Allison.
Well, hello there. Thank you, Patrick, and all of you there.
Thank you.
Just a quick comment and perfect for end of the hour regarding the assault rifles and the push for gun control and extreme measures. Something we American citizens have uniquely in this country is the right to bear arms. And I just want to say one point. Having been, I'm an Air Force and Navy veteran, one of the reasons China... Multiple leaders have said in the past, we will never invade America, at least they say, in large part because Americans bear arms. They have something to fight us with. I'm an M16 marksman, and many of my fellow veterans are, and if we were called up to help out, we would run to a base and help gather up the arms and take care of things. But I'm just saying, within our country, the part of the reason we were well-trained for World War II was, and Korea and so forth, Vietnam, a lot of the guys out on the farms, in the city, wherever, they were well-practiced and well-versed in firearms. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, that's true. I don't dispute any of
benefit
that. Nonetheless, in spite of that fact, we're still faced now with a raging epidemic of insane gun violence. And clearly, and this is something you're alluding to, if you don't mind my connecting the dots here, we didn't have this problem, say, 50, 60 years ago. Something has changed in this society. We didn't have mass shootings. And even earlier in our history, when virtually everybody had guns because they had to hunt to get their food or they lived on farms, most of them, we didn't have this problem. So the real question, it seems to me, Allison, is why are we having this problem now in the last 40, 50 years in a way unlike we did before? And I say that there are dynamics in our culture that are sowing the seeds of this kind of violence, the mass shooting. Is it psychotropic drugs that many people are on? Is it violent video games that many people are playing? Is it, what are some of the factors, not up to and including, for example, this marinating that we've been doing in this mindset that it's okay to kill people through abortion to get what we want? I'm sure there are many different factors. Those are a few of the ones that we can call into question. So it's clearly not quote unquote gun culture per se, because we used to have a gun culture and we didn't have mass shootings. Now we have a gun shooting and we have mass shootings. So it seems like the best thing to do is to analyze what are some of the root causes that have led up to that. Those are my thoughts, Allison. Thank you for that. Let's go now to Warren in Baltimore. Hello, Warren.
Hi, Pat. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to tell you thank you just for what you do. You helped me find my way back to the Catholic Church about a year and a half ago, and I won't belabor that.
God bless you, and welcome home.
Thank you. Gun control. I'm just going to briefly say, gun control basically means the government controls guns. And that has never, ever led to a good outcome. And, you know, whether we look at the 20th century history of all socialist regimes that have came about, their first approach is gun control. I mean, they control who owns the guns. And then their next step is they control the people, and those that can't be controlled, they kill them. And we had hundreds of millions of people murdered, I would say, in the 20th century, primarily due to gun control. And you don't have to go to the 20th century, just look at today in our cities where there is gun control. And gun control again means the government has decided who will and who will not own guns by how they enforce the laws.
Let me intervene, if I may. I would propose, I'd like to know what you think, that we already have and have had indefinitely gun control because the government does control to some extent how and where you can buy guns and, you know, how and where they can be used and what kind of guns. And it seems to be a livable situation. But what I think you're referring to is a more restrictive form of gun control that would enable, or maybe put it this way, that would make it so that citizens who use guns responsibly and in a virtuous way, let's say for sport or hunting or something like that, that they would be more vulnerable to violence, let alone from the government, but maybe more so because of crime. And the people who are going to be doing the crimes will have the guns, and the people who need to defend themselves from the crimes won't have any guns to defend themselves. So are you referring to a more restrictive form of gun control? Because I think we already have gun control, and it seems to have been working.
I believe exponentially that our gun crime, so to speak, and I hate that terminology, have increased with gun control that the government has levied, whether it's in our big cities or, mm-hmm. or nationally or whatever. Every time they add a new gun control device, law, gun crime increases.
Have you noticed, Brian, forgive my interruption, I'm sure you noticed, that people are talking about it on the media, that in the case of the terrible shooting that took place just a couple of days ago on the 4th of July in Illinois, that area in that state is one of the most restrictive states when it comes to guns. And yet this, in spite of all the restrictions, this crime took place. And how it seems to speak to the fact that excessive restriction doesn't end the problem. There must be other root causes of this problem that are not traceable back to...
Not only does it not help the problem, it exacerbates the problem. And I think the more, just refer to, there was a special on Tucker Carlson on Brazil. And if you look at some of the data, I'm not going to go over it now because I'm sure I don't have time. The recently elected president basically started allowing gun ownership, and their murders and crime have gone down exponentially since then.
Yeah, no, I understand the dynamics. I do, and I'm familiar with the logic there. I don't dispute any of that. But it leaves us nonetheless, Warren, with a horrible situation where we have these terrible mass shootings, people in churches and grocery stores there to see a parade with their children. So we have a serious problem, and tell me what you think, but my perception is what makes this so precarious is that the issue of guns has become so politicized that any kind of movement in one direction or the other is seen by the people, Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other, as being a concession to the other side. Therefore, neither side will concede, and we're stuck now.
I think the scientific correlation is that we've had in the last few years, or at least a year and a half, a reduction in the ability, the desire by these politicians, they call DAs in these cities, to prosecute people, put them in jail, and go after the criminal element and put the criminal element in jail. And as it's not just that specific individuals go to jail, it's the whole premise that, hey, I don't even have to worry about this, I can get away with it, or if I don't get away with it, it's okay too, because that's our culture, is crime is okay.
And that's a whole separate area of discussion that I wish we had time for, but I've got to take a break, a 21-hour break, by the way, Warren, right now. Thank you for that. I'll just leave the thought out there that this is a vexing topic that's going to require some kind of solution, but in order to find a solution, people are going to have to be willing to at least find some movement in a direction, and I don't see how people nowadays are willing to do that. We'll see. Anyway, thank you. I appreciate it. And this time, I really am done with the show for today. And we've done our full 3 hours. And we'll be back again tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel. I'll pray for you. Please pray for me. God bless you.